Welcome, market participants, to another Three Things in Credit. I'm Van Hesser, Chief Strategist at KBRA. Each week, we bring you three things impacting credit markets that we think you should know about. I caught up with the latest edition of Jamie Dimon's quickly becoming legendary annual shareholder letter slash manifesto this week. One particular thread caught my attention, his take on bank regulation. While acknowledging that some, quote, good things, unquote, came about post the GFC, he was quick to add that it would probably be an understatement to say that some rules are duplicative, inconsistent, pro-cyclical, contradictory, extremely costly, and unnecessarily painful for both banks and regulators. He added, many of the rules have unintended consequences that are not desirable and have negative impacts. Ah, our tax dollars at work. All right, this week our three things are, one, the CPI print. Is it really shocking? Two, earnings season. A third consecutive quarter of earnings growth is forecast, but peel this onion a bit and you'll find some troubling undertones. And three, event risk. It's been relatively quiet. We'll explore. All right, let's dig a bit deeper. The CPI print. I really didn't feel the need to talk about the so-called hot CPI print this week, until I saw the 10-year undergo a 3-standard deviation move. I wouldn't have thought that a miss of 6 basis points, that's where the actual core came in at 0.36% month-on-month versus an estimate of 0.3%, and where the year-on-year of 3.8% versus the estimate of 3.7% would be all that earth-shattering. But clearly the market was not set up for this. When you dig into the data, you find that auto insurance and healthcare accounted for much of the miss. Then, throw in the shelter components, which lag by a year, and where real-time measures are considerably lower, and the rest of core comes in at 0.1%. And by my count, only 29 of the 80 categories came in above 2% year-on-year. And for context, other measures are not flashing red. The Cleveland Fed trimmed mean is at 0.3% month-on-month, and Morgan Stanley's forecast for core PCE, remember that's the Fed's preferred measure, incorporating inputs from both the latest CPI and PPI reports, comes in at 0.246% in March, with the annual growth rate at 2.69%. So what do we do with all this? Well, one, higher for longer is here. Human beings comprise the FOMC, and I can't help but think that appearances matter. It'll be harder for them to cut post this report than was the case a few days ago. We've now figured 2 cuts rest of year, down from 3. 2. Higher for longer means the economy is stronger than expected. It continues to grow above potential and job creation remains strong. By the way, that's not bad for credit. 3. Wage growth remains under control and the inflation story configures to move down as shelter catches up. Let's not jump to the Fed's going to raise rates just yet. And 4, a reminder that a borrowing environment of 24% credit card rates, 7% mortgages, and 11% middle market loans is not an economic tailwind. Don't forget about the long and variable lagged effects of monetary tightening when modeling out growth. In other words, the trends remain the same. Inflation is coming down, growth is set to slow, and rate cuts for the rest of the year are not off the table. All right, on to our second thing, earnings season. For all the obsession with non-farm payrolls and CPI, no single metric underpins credit markets, all credit markets, secured and unsecured, more than corporate earnings growth. Not only does corporate earnings growth support equity markets, which also tends to drive credit sentiment, but corporates rent buildings and CMBS transactions, they employ consumers whose borrowings end up in ABS transactions, and pay taxes that support the muni market. You get the picture. So as the economy continues to evolve, normalize, post the pandemic, what does this earnings season have in store for us? Well, as background, using the S&P 500 as our universe, we've come out of this cycle's earnings recession. That's 2 consecutive quarters or more, in this case 3, of negative earnings growth. Well, that happened in Q4 2022 through Q2 2023. And for Q1, analysts are expecting a 3rd consecutive quarter of earnings growth, in this case 4.1%, This is net income, by the way, not EPS. And that's driven by stable margins and a 3.5% bump in sales. That's consistent with the soft landing narrative. And ex-energy, that number is better still at 6.9%. And peel this onion a bit more, and there are some unsettling trends. Despite the recent run-up in commodities, analysts see double-digit declines in energy and materials. The only other sector of the S&P's 11 that is forecast to have a meaningful year-over-year drop is healthcare, which is forecast to be down 8.5%, its seventh consecutive quarter of contraction. And much of that reflects ongoing weakness in pharmaceuticals and biotech. Now, strip out the top five firms of the S&P, and the S&P 495 is expected to contract nearly 1%. We see airlines down 40%. Autos expecting to be down 25%, air freight down 23%, real estate firms down 17%, banks down 16%, and food producers down 8%. Among small business, something we touched on last week in the podcast, and where the latest NFIB Optimism Index out this week hit an 11-year low, expectations are for a 14% year-on-year drop. That's the sixth consecutive quarterly contraction. The NFIB cited numerous economic headwinds, including inflation and the tight labor market, and the net percent of respondents expecting business conditions to be better 6 months from now, that's better minus worse, is a whopping minus 36%. That's from the NFIB's Business Optimism Survey. So needless to say, we're not out of the woods yet. All right, on to our third thing, event risk. Remember when debt was historically irrationally cheap and abundant? It still may be abundant, and it's really not all that expensive, but this new paradigm in credit, higher for longer, coupled with an administration that is decidedly wary of big business getting bigger, and you have an amelioration of one of investment-grade bondholders' greatest fears, return-destroying event risk. The merger that results in a weaker credit on a pro forma basis, and if it's particularly levered, watch out. Now, post the GFC, central bank engineered ultra-low rates, of course, made the cost of downgrade to an issuer very low. So the thinking typically went, why not lever up? It would be irresponsible to my shareholders not to. That is, unless you could envision a world where quantitative easing was not the norm. Well, it took a while, but that world is here. And the uncertainty as to, one, when the Fed might actually ease, and two, what the ultimate impact will be of all of this monetary tightening, make modeling out value creation difficult, certainly more difficult than a few years ago. And meanwhile, the administration's crackdown on M&A, something former Treasury Secretary Larry Summers calls, quote, a war on business, unquote, well, that's not likely to change, at least until the election in November. All of this means less event risk. And by the way, that's good for credit. So there you have it. Three things in credit. One, the CPI print. We think it's less of a game changer than the market move implies. Two, earnings season. The aggregate numbers for the large caps are okay, but expected results underneath are more mixed. And three, event risk. Ah, a silver lining to higher rates. As always, thanks for joining. Don't forget to check in on KBRA.com for our ratings reports and our latest research. We'll see you next week. Hello, listeners. Join me, Van Hesser, KBRA's chief strategist, for in-depth conversations with credit experts in my new monthly podcast, Leading Voices in Credit, where I'll interview market professionals on the latest trends in credit markets. That's Leading Voices in Credit with Van Hesser. Subscribe now.